Hello, everyone. This is Steli FD.
And Heaton Shah.
And in today's episode of the Startup Chat, we're going to talk about SaaS pricing.
I think we like talking about more than just sales and marketing.
We just want to bullshit and chat about business and life. And hopefully, while we're doing that, provide a lot of value to people.
The world's best business podcast.
Oh, shit. We got it.
For people trying to get shit done.
Yeah. We don't want to give you feedback that's bullshit.
We want you to do your best.
So this has been a requested episode. This is something a lot of people want us to talk about. There's a lot of great resources out there that already talk about pricing. But I know that we have a lot of thoughts on this. So people want to hear us talk about this topic. So let's chat about that. What's your overall framework when it comes to figuring out pricing? Let's start from a new SaaS app perspective. We can talk about later on, like, changing pricing if you feel like you haven't gotten it right, because that's a challenge in itself and an interesting one. But you build a SaaS product and you're trying to figure out what should be the price that I set for this. What's the framework that you use? What are mistakes that people make? What's the way that you think about this?
Okay. So I just looked through my email and I get about 2 or 3 emails a day from people, whether it's internal team, external, about with the word pricing in it. Right. And this is not sales. This is like literally questions on pricing or pricing updates or something, right? Like something in there. And then if you count all the other ones, you're talking about I think it's about a dozen emails a day with pricing in it. Mm. Right. So like at least, you know, 5, 6 tactical, and the rest are just like, we had pricing changes or whatever. It's super interesting of how popular of a topic this is. I think my opinion on pricing has a lot, the core of it starts with, there's a lot of resources out there on pricing. There's the Price Intelligently blog, which is the one that has branded themselves, and that company, they're friends of mine. I like them. They've helped me with pricing and helped a lot of SaaS companies with pricing. So I say read their blog. Literally, you can read their blog if you don't have the money to pay them and get 90% of what you need in terms of like learning how to do it and having probably a better shot than I ever did at doing pricing whenever I had to do it without their blog. So all of our team reads it when we're working on this stuff. It's not even an endorsement. It's like, that's the source right now. And there's a bunch of other blogs that are like, you know, Baremetrics blog and a bunch of others that are helping you monitor your pricing and stuff. So some of those have great content on pricing. Although I'd say that Price Intelligently has the most experience with SaaS pricing. So I do that first. But outside of that, I think there's one fundamental thing that I see a lot of people forget. There's things like value-based pricing, feature-based pricing, and all this chopping up. But fundamentally, like, the reason you have pricing is so that you're reducing the amount of friction it takes for someone to buy from you. And your pricing has to do that. That doesn't mean your pricing is simple. That doesn't mean anything except that like you're trying to make it easy to buy. And I always come back to that every time I think about the pricing, even on complex pricing, because sometimes complex pricing makes a lot of sense, right? Because the way you're getting people to pay is through like a freemium product. Mm. So you might want to find all the different ways they can pay. And that might require a lot of complexity, or you might be trying to do a lot of things with your product. And so different departments, different teams, different people want to pay a different way, right? Because you're trying to reduce the amount of friction it takes for someone to buy. Right. That's like the core of pricing. For example, if people are paying for your product on a per page view basis, it's probably not the best idea to charge them per seat. Right. And from a, this is just personal experience, but in an analytics company, there's a lot of analytics companies. A lot of them try to add per seat pricing into their model, but then they go back to per session, per page view, per visit, per event, or something like that, because seats don't matter in analytics, because not everyone in the company is typically using an analytics tool.
Yeah. And also,
So that's just an example.
But that's also because the value that your product creates for them is increasing by the size of data that they have to look at. So it makes sense for you to charge more in that level because you create a lot more value.
Well, they're just used to paying for it like that.
I think
one of your point is valid.
Yeah.
But they're just used to paying. Yeah. And that's the biggest, I think that's the biggest pull you have towards pricing is how they want to pay for it.
Mm.
And that's the lens I don't see enough conversation about.
So if I wanted to challenge you on this, I know, I'm pretty certain I know what the response is, but I'll do it anyways because I think this is a valid thought at least, is, well, if at the core of pricing is the question, how do I make it as easy as possible to buy? Zero is the right price for everything, right? Because that wouldn't that make it the easiest for everybody to buy? I know the answer is
not
yes.
But they're not buying. At zero, they're not buying.
But they're not buying.
They're using.
Yeah, okay.
They're users. Fair. Like literally, they're not a customer. Like in technical terms.
Technical terms. That's true. But let's say then, you know, $1, $1, like whatever the cheapest, insanely cheapest thing that you can think of.
You got them. You got them to pull out their credit card. Right. And now it's your job to get them to pay you more if you can add more value to their lives.
So, by the way, I don't think that that's even true, because I think that for certain products, like in the enterprise world, very, very cheap could make them not want to buy.
They don't buy. Yeah. Buy, and, right? And what I'm saying respects that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's reducing friction. So if enterprise says, I want to pay you more for X, Y, and Z, and you say no, you are increasing the friction it takes for them to buy. Right? Yeah. And enterprise is way typical of this, right? Because like historically, enterprise products have been built by this process. They hear it in sales. They build it in product and engineering, or R&D, if you want to call it that. Yeah. And then they hear it in sales and they build it. And then sales sells it. And then they build it. And then sales sells it. And then, you know, it's just this back and forth. And so in that case, they're just reducing the friction to purchase.
Yeah.
Even in enterprise.
So here's a framework that I've used a lot of times with people on the pricing side. And I'm curious to hear how you think about this. Because from a sales perspective, what I see a lot of B2B SaaS companies go through is that they are trying to set a price that will reduce any type of friction where somebody could bring up price as a reason not to buy, which very much aligns with the philosophy that you've said, right? At the same
time, it's the other side of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I truly believe that if 100% of your customers are saying, oh, pricing was never even a topic, you're charging too little. I feel like you're at kind of the right equilibrium of things.
When some people say no.
When some people say this is cheap, some people say this is too expensive, and the most people feel like this is the right price for the value I'm getting.
Yeah.
So you're not trying to optimize to get everybody to say this is
so
inexpensive, I don't even think about it.
But again, there's all kinds of alternatives to that. Let me give you an example. If too many people are saying no, how do you know there's too many people saying no? And I don't think I've never heard a good answer to this. How do you know that too many people are saying no, or too little people are saying no, or too many people are saying it's too cheap? Like it's very hard to quantify this because like most people don't have enough data. They don't have enough no's. They don't even log the no's in that way.
Most founders of a new SaaS only need one prospect to say this is too expensive to instantly change their pricing.
So that's the worry, early stage. Yeah. That's the problem. So you're saying if just because the first person says no doesn't mean your pricing is wrong.
Yeah, doesn't mean your pricing is wrong. Doesn't mean this is the right buyer.
Okay.
So you need to hear a bunch of people tell you this is too expensive. A bunch of people you need to hear a mix of things to know where you are in the spectrum.
Okay, so this is earlier pricing.
Yeah.
If you're just sort of offering it and you're sort of doing it through sales calls or inbound or whatever.
Customer development. You talk to people, they ask you what would it cost, you say, and they go, oh, this is too expensive. Yeah. And people, because of insecurities, instantly typically go, let's set the price so low that nobody would ever tell me this is too expensive.
So this super relates to something that like really bugged me, which is like, whether it's you're doing it through sales or the way you're saying, like, just go figure out what they're paying for today. Like if you just did that, the way you think about how to charge and the price you first lay out will probably hit the right mix. If you just figure out what they're paying for, how they're paying for those things, whether they're competitive to your product or not, someone's a buyer. What else does that buyer pay for and how much? I start asking them in customer development, well, I'd love to know what you're paying for today. What plan are you on?
Mm.
Right? Even if it's not competitive, what are you paying for? Like you in your role, what do you pay for that you're responsible for?
Yeah.
Right? If you're talking to a buyer, that's great.
Yeah.
Right? If you're talking to a user, you ask, what do you use? Do you know what plan you're on? What functionality does it have? Even if it's not related to what I'm trying to sell them or what I'm building, because then I have guidance. And then I can say, oh, I know this is not related, but it's cheaper than Kissmetrics. I know it's not related, but you're already paying that much. Look at the value they deliver for you.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is I'm going to charge you less, and I think we can deliver even more value than a tool like that.
Yeah.
And you're not even competing with Kissmetrics, but you're just saying that like you have a frame of reference to help think through what the pricing should be and a way to communicate with them. So even in this might be a sales tactic, this might be customer development, I don't know, but I like to go find out what they're paying for, especially in a market when I don't know what to charge.
Yeah. The other thing is, this also is kind of early days related, but a lot of other companies in the early days in SaaS, when they create a pricing, they get a few early customers, and then because the product is so early and it doesn't do everything that people want, right? It's missing some maybe core functionality. When early customers churn then and say, this didn't deliver as much value, this needed these other things that it's not there yet, and I need more powerful features or integrations or whatever it is, the natural instinct is instead of saying, okay, this is an uncomfortable spot for us to be in as a SaaS company, but the way to fix this is create more value, and make the product all it can be versus let us adjust pricing, right? Which is the wrong tactic to solve this problem.
So do you think people are just not asking why they wouldn't pay? Because if someone tells me they don't want to pay the price, I'd be like, why not? And then I would be like, well, what would get you to pay the price? What do we need to do? Right? Because if you get enough data on that, you can probably triangulate.
I think it's, I mean, it is asking why, but it's also realizing that in a negotiation, the information that you get is not always authentic and true. And a lot of buyers will mindlessly feel like they need to demand something close to zero because that seems to be like the best thing outcome for them. Although they don't realize that they pay a lot of zero. They pay all this money, all these other things.
Right.
But if you just casually ask them for their opinion, they'll go, well, zero is what I want, right? But then they go and they spend all this money somewhere else.
Yeah.
So it's also the experience of just not taking people on their word, understanding that when you go out to sell somebody on your solution, the goal is not like there's transactional sales. Like when I go to a bakery and I go, I want this loaf of bread, and the salesperson says, $2, please. That was a sale, but that person had to do nothing, right? It was totally transactional versus me going and saying, this is a $20 million enterprise solution we want to integrate at IBM. That's going to need some back and forth, and people not just say yes to everything.
Yeah.
And people, in our experience,
it's a process.
It's a process. So you're not trying to avoid any kind of resistance. You're just trying to avoid the wrong resistance, and you try to understand what they're truly resisting and what they're not. But going away from that, so in your case, what you're saying is go and look, how are people buying today and what are they paying for?
Yeah.
What's the framework they're used to?
Yeah.
Okay, so let's say there's a range of frameworks, right? Even, you know, the advice here probably would be, who's your customer? Is it the enterprise, the SMB, the professional, the end consumer? But let's say even in a specific segment, let's say you do the prosumer, right? You're an app that like professionals use. You say, even in that world, there's 10 other companies or products that have a wide variety of pricing range. There's some more premium products. There's some, how do I choose how to charge it? Am I always going to try to be the cheapest one? Am I trying to be the most expensive? Do I try to be just in the middle? Who is the more popular app? Let's be their pricing. Let's be a little cheaper than them. How do you decide? Because part of pricing is also marketing and positioning and kind of how people will perceive your product. I mean, it's nowhere more prevalent than in the end consumer world with like, you can buy a car and it can widely range in pricing depending on, you know, what people, the perceived value that the people associate with that. So how do you think about it once there's multiple options?
I think cars are a great analogy. And I think it's like, you want to be Toyota? You want a Toyota? You want to buy a Toyota? You want to buy a Honda? You want to buy a Lexus? You want to buy a BMW? You want to buy Audi? You want to buy a Ford? You want to buy a Chevy, right? So like, to me, it's like, there's a lot of variety out there. And if you take that analogy and look at like your competitive landscape, right? And just look at how people are pricing, because that's essentially what you're talking about, right? There's low, medium, high. Everyone is if the business has been running long enough, say a year or more, maybe two, you can already imply that they've tried at least a few things and something might be working, right? I'm just making some assumptions, right?
Yeah.
But it's probably true. And so then I would just look at like, well, they're priced like this, they target Y. They price like this, they target X. They price like this, they target Z. And then be like, where do we want to fit in? Mm-hmm. Or do we not want to fit in and have a whole different approach? But I don't think there's a price high, price low, price medium option, like way to think about it. I think it's more like, what's our entry point? And that has a lot to do with the value you're adding. Because if you're a super, you know, if there's someone who's targeting enterprise, it's likely you cannot today from the get-go add the same value they do.
Mm-hmm.
So you're either selling something small to that customer because they'll accept it. Enterprise usually doesn't.
Yeah.
Or you're selling to somebody who the other company that's targeting enterprise doesn't worry about, right? Which is a lower end customer. But then you might have other competitors on that scape. So I think it's just a process of narrowing, right? It's like, well, like we have a certain feature set, right? If there's already a market that exists, we can look at those products and say, where does our feature set align with how those product feature sets are? Because that'll already be instantly in the customer's head or can be when they come to us and want to buy from us. So then it's about being competitive enough or being so different that you can provide something those other folks can't.
Let's switch gears.
Yeah.
So we talked a little bit about early day pricing and how to think about it and a place and a great resource to learn more about it. Let's talk about folks out there that have a SaaS product that had a pricing for a while And for one reason or another, how do they know that it's not working if they are thinking about changing it? Because a lot of people are thinking about changing their pricing. Then they struggle through deciding if pricing is truly the problem. If so, how to change it, and then how to go through the transition.
I'm just going to start.
Yep.
But this is like such a daunting thing, and it's such a simple answer, right? It just literally boils down to like, what's going to make your business work? The best answer is data. So like there's an economic equation in your business, whether you know it or not, right? A certain amount of people come, certain people go through a bunch of steps, there's a conversion rate, and there's a revenue at the end, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you just think about it, like my business is that, and then being able to determine all these different, whether it's configurations or, you know, things like, should I target small business or large enterprise, right? I already have running data.
Yeah.
So I should already be able to tell who my customers are. Yeah. So then you do simple things like segmentation, like by company size. Is there a churn rate that's lower or higher? What's going to make my business grow? That's the fundamental question. You need to know your equation, and then you need to have segmentation, and that segmentation helps you determine where you go focus your efforts. I'm probably very data oriented on it first, but like if you have a running business, you have data.
Yeah.
Let's use that data.
Yeah.
That's like my answer, right? Because it's all different. I've seen all different things. Like I was talking to an entrepreneur today. Well, he targets SMBs. He's had a business for a while. It's all self-service. And he just started sales a few months ago. And like, he's like, I want to go do all that. I'm like, yeah, sounds good. And he's like, I thought you'd say we shouldn't do that. I'm like, no, contextually, you've provided information about your business to me and yourself and your team that the direction you're thinking is right.
Yeah.
So why would I argue with that, right? Just because I love freemium, right?
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
This is right. Like it makes sense. So to me, it's very contextual.
So right? how do you manage the change? Because I think that's something that people prevents people from going through it because they're afraid about their customers, the existing customers. They're afraid about the unknown of what's going to happen in the future. They're afraid of their employees. Yeah. Some people in the team don't agree with this pricing. Yeah. It's changed, right?
So there's a lot of tactics on keeping customers happy. So I'm going to save those for like the blogs that write about them, right? Because, you know, there's a ton. I'm sure you've dealt with it.
Yeah.
But I think the bigger thing is your internal team.
Yeah.
But again, if you lead with data, they're not going to think you're making it up because you're not. You're like, look, we looked at this.
Yeah.
Here's what the data says. And we got to decide here's the data. Now we got to decide what we want to do based on that, which are two different things, but you know?
Yeah, but so I like it, but I also think that data is not always, many times data is not fully conclusive.
Sure.
Short of some bias or subjectivity.
Yeah, like so, what's the traffic that's coming in,
So I can look at the data and go, this tells us we should do X, Y, and Z, and then somebody else can look at them and say, I don't agree with that.
Yeah, so that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is data are facts. So let's just get the facts.
Facts.
Let's not talk about what we're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Let's get the facts.
Yeah.
Then we can either get in a room and debate the facts if we need to first.
Mm-hmm.
But usually nobody debates facts. If you say they're facts and you prove it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you talk about, well, what do we do with this information?
Yeah. What's
I have an intuition. Here's what I think. Let's align on it's an alignment thing. Mm-hmm. It's an alignment meeting because you have data. Right? Yeah. The best alignment meetings are when you have data.
Yeah.
It's not that the data tells you what to do. You still have to decide. Right. And yeah, you can debate it, but like the data is truth if it's truthful data and if it's data about a customer base. Right. So if you actually already have customers, I would just go literally get that data, do the right segmentation, debate the segmentation, get the data, then have a meeting that's about alignment and figuring out what we all should do together about this. For example, I've seen companies who have high small business churn that actually have fixed that and now have very low small business churn. I've seen a company in the same space that has high small business churn that didn't want to fix it and wanted to move up market because they already tasted it.
Mm.
And so then they figured out how to do that. They're working too,
yeah.
Right? So it's more of like just looking at the data and knowing what your capabilities are on the team and where the alignment is and then going. Because a lot of times like the answer of like, where do you hit the market? Isn't like a binary one. That's why there's so many competitors in all these markets targeting all different segments. So it's just about sort of breathing almost. And be like, this is okay. We just need to use some data. And then we can talk about it. And then alignment comes. Because everyone gets stuck on how are we going to make the change instead of what's the change we want to make.
I love it. Also, the other nugget that I really like is and we've talked about this with like authenticity, right?
Yeah.
Your authentic competitive advantage. And in this case, it's not what is the right price for everybody, but is what is the pricing that fits the customer we want to serve and the team and company that we are, like the
which
people
we are. Which is the business
we
want to build, right? Between those two things.
Yes.
Yeah, love that.
And asking that question can clarify a lot of things because if you don't ask that question, it's a much more challenging question to ask. What's the right pricing without thinking about the customer or the business that you want to build is almost impossible to answer. Yeah. But if you ask yourself, what kind of people are we? What kind of a, do we want to be, a, you know, build a premium brand? Do we want to do this? Do we want to do that? Do we want to reach as many people as possible or just a small segment? And what's authentic to authentic? Because some people say, oh, we want to build the super premium, premium business. And I, you know, I want to be the Porsche of the SaaS category. Cool. What are the what's the clothes you wear? What are the things you buy? What are the way that you interact with the world as a consumer? If somebody is super cheap and only buys at the cheapest stores and only rides the bus and doesn't spend any money on anything, but then wants to build a luxury brand, I have an issue with that usually.
Totally, because
it's not congruent with the life you
They're
live.
They're going to have to learn a lot of stuff to be able to do that and change a lot of things.
Yes.
And it's one of the hardest things to tell founders, right? Yeah. When they see this attractive thing.
Yeah, they think, oh, these people are doing it right, so I want to be like them.
Yeah, like,
but you don't realize you're not like these people.
Yeah.
So do something that fits you and who you are and not – there's many ways to be successful. So why don't you just find something that's authentic to kind of your personality, your culture anyways?
That's right.
So I think that's a super crucial one, is that – and also the separation between let's look at fact and then –
and then we can debate what to do,
what our interpretation of the facts are.
Yeah.
Right? Those are two separate
things.
But
these are facts, right?
Yes, I like that. Those are our tips because we already hit the line.
Good.
I think that's it.
Yeah.
All right. So, if you guys like this episode, you should check out the episode about freemium in SaaS.
Yep.
It was a more heated debate between Heaton and I on the pros and cons on freemium and free in SaaS. Check that episode out. And also, if you like the podcast, please go to iTunes and give us a rating, good or bad. Write us a review, good or bad. Feedback is the breakfast for champions, and we love your feedback. That's it from us.
See ya.